I think everyone needs to find within them the courage to take chances. So many people are their own worst enemies, and they're afraid, and they stand back, and they question themselves. And I think most people will look back on their lives, and no matter what industry they're in or what they did, they're going to wish they took more chances and were less afraid. I think that most of us would look back and be like, why was I so stressed?
Yeah.
Why didn't I do more? Why didn't I try? Why didn't I ask? You'll never regret something that you try and fail at, because it's a lesson and it shouldn't be a regret. But I think you do regret the shots that you don't take and the missed opportunities and wondering, like, well, what if I did?
Welcome to Live with Bitcoin, where we delve into the human side of Bitcoin by focusing on Bitcoiners' personal transformations and life stories. I'm your host, Vivian. Thanks for tuning in. If you like and want to support our mission on shining light on the human side of Bitcoin, remember to subscribe to this channel, leave a comment, or send a few sats from link in the description. Today, our guest is Natalie Brunell. Chances are you're already familiar with her work as an educator, podcast host, media commentator, and more. She hosts a Coin Stories podcast, which focuses on a diverse range of voices in Bitcoin and Bitcoin's impact both on the personal level as well as on the global economics and technology trends. Before her involvement in Bitcoin, Natalie also has had a successful career as an investigative journalist and TV anchor, working for various news outlets in the US. Welcome, Natalie.
Hi, Vivian. It's so great to join your show. Congratulations.
We met last year officially met last year in Miami during last women's brunch you hosted during the Bitcoin conference, and you're hosting another one just very, very soon now in Nashville. And thank you so much for bringing all these women together. And it has been a great year knowing you, and you've always been so kind and generous to me and to other Bitcoiners in the space. And thank you for all your hard work and all the kindness you've spread in the world.
Thank you. I really appreciate how welcoming the community has been. And one thing that I noticed is when I went to my first conference, I didn't spot a lot of women there. I didn't feel like I knew a lot of women in the space. Most of my podcast guests were men. And I'm someone who believes that women should support women, and I like spending time with other girlfriends. So it's really nice that this mission has grown to the extent that it has, because we put on our first brunch 3 years ago, not expecting how many people would show up or be interested. And we filled a restaurant, 100 people at the time, our capacity. And then we doubled that last year. And this year we're going to have 300 women. And I'm just so excited. And it's just fun to be around the energy and build community and form friendships that hopefully will last a very long time. And I'm glad that I met you through it as well.
Last year was the first women's brunch that I went to. And I was certainly surprised of how many people were there, because when we were doing the group photo, it was like we took over the stage.
I know. It was so fun to see. Because again, when you go to some of these events, you feel a little bit outnumbered. I remember in 2021, I dragged my girlfriend, who was not in Bitcoin at the time, but I orange-pilled her. Hello, Paula. And we found it so crazy that the line for the men's bathroom was this long queue.
That
usually only happens with girls, you know? And then the girls' bathroom was pretty much empty. And I was like, where are the women? So many of my friends and peers, they are hardworking. They have built up their careers. They want to save for their future. They're not educated on the financial system like I wasn't before Bitcoin. And I want to help them, because I feel like if you see someone who looks like you or sounds like you, you're maybe more likely to listen and open up your mind. And so I just hope to be one of many, many, many female voices in this space.
You've definitely been super inspirational and encouraging lots of women to, including myself, to start something in this field and bringing more women and more people in general onto the Bitcoin standard. And I've certainly been very much inspired by your content and your energy in this space and your approach. And this is something we're needing very much in the space, and glad to see we're seeing more and more of female voices and more cultural and personal approaches in Bitcoin.
No, I completely agree. My favorite message is Bitcoin is for everyone. I love when I meet people from every background, all different countries, different ages. I mean, I've talked to little kids that understand Bitcoin better than the average adult. I've met people who are, you know, in their 80s who are passionate about Bitcoin. It's just so cool how this world is bringing everyone together. And I actually think it's one of the things we need the most because we're so divided, especially here in the United States. It's so sad to see how many people have just turned themselves into this team versus that team, and they silo themselves off, and everyone sort of fights on social media. When at the end of the day, I'm a really big believer that we have so much more in common than what divides us. Most people want to be able to plan for their future, take care of their loved ones. They have dreams and ambitions, whether they feel that they are within reach or not. And a lot of people are struggling financially because we do have a system of sort of haves versus have-nots. And the have-nots has grown disproportionately. It's a big group of us. And I would consider, you know, most people in the working class in that bucket, and they want empowerment and they want a chance to kind of catch up, especially young people who have been left behind in the legacy financial system. So Bitcoin gives me a lot of hope. It really does. And so I think this is a very positive mission.
I tuned into your episode with Walker on the Bitcoin podcast, as well as Effort on your The Voice, and those where you uncovered a lot of your upbringing and your stories, which I encourage everyone to check them out because those are great episodes and covering great perspectives and your life stories. And today we're going to take a different approach where I'll take these as context, and I'll ask you some questions where, like, your learnings and how your transformation took place through these experiences. We're both first generation immigrants. Growing up, we hear this term American dream, the American dream, and that's portrayed in movies and books and TVs and all of these media outlets. And this very concept has inspired millions of Americans and people from all over the world. So growing up, what was your impression of the American dream?
I was 5 years old when they immigrated to the suburbs of Chicago, and they chose that area because of its Polish population. I don't know if many people know that, but Chicago's like Little Warsaw. It's the second biggest Polish population. And I just knew what my mom shared, which was that America represented a place of hope, of social mobility, and of opportunity, where no matter where you came from, you could come from total poverty. You can build the life you want. You can achieve whatever you want if you work hard, if you're a good person, if you work hard and you take chances. And that didn't really exist where she came from. She lived in a communist country. Some people might be familiar with Poland's history. And there was no sense of social mobility and sort of generating wealth. Most of the functions economically were controlled by the government. There were a lot of instances of scarcity. I remember my mom sharing stories of how she would be waiting with me in line for food, and she would get up to the front and they would be out. Because when the government controls resources, they don't know how to allocate properly, and the price signals are all skewed. And so there's a lot of scarcity. And it's just sad to think that we haven't learned our lesson, right? I mean, think about how many times we've read a history of nations and empires who have fallen because of inflation and too much government control or intervention, and we constantly make the same mistakes. Hopefully Bitcoiners are helping change that and turn the tides. But my stories just of the American dream really center on my mom's vision for what our life could be here. And she was really the trailblazer. She tried for many, many years to be able to come through a lottery system, a visa lottery, and that never happened until she was 38. I was 5. My brother was already, he was 11 years older, so 16. And, you know, a lot of people would have said, it's too late. We don't know the language. We should just stay here with what we know. And my mom said no. And I respect that. And maybe I've adopted some of that, because today we see so many people who just go with the status quo. They don't question it. They're fearful of what's outside. And I think that includes Bitcoin. People are almost afraid of Bitcoin because it questions all the things that they've come to accept, and they're uncomfortable with the changes. And so they are kind of opposed, or they they push back against Bitcoin, even though it's not only inevitable, but it's something that would drastically change their lives for the better. And it's what embracing a new technology is really all about, is opening your mind and allowing more opportunity and more prosperity and abundance to flow. So I'm really grateful that I had someone like my mom as a leader and as a role model, because in so many ways, the things that are core to Bitcoin, I see in the way my mom lived her life and what brought her here.
You're moving home with your family and all of the resources financially and your energy and all of the uncertainties you have to deal with young kids starting over. That's a lot of courage and strength someone represents. Someone must have to pull off all these changes for the better, right? Experiencing what you have experienced in your career, how does your understanding of the American dream evolve over time?
I think when we're young, we all have this idyllic view of life and the future, and we're all full of a lot of hope. I think that's one of the most beautiful and innocent qualities of the young mind and of children, is you're just embodied with so much hope, and you think everything is going to work out and good always conquers evil. And as you get older, you realize that there are forces sometimes that work against that. And I think that leads you down the path of questioning. And it certainly did for me, because I started to wonder, I mean, how can these bad things happen? And especially when you look at the economic situation, I mean, growing up, I saw my parents work so hard, and it took them so long to finally be able to afford the down payment to get a mortgage for a little tiny modest townhouse. And then just they lost it in just a couple years in the great financial crisis, while all these other people that were in positions of power, or they worked in banks and Wall Street or close to the government, they all got bailed out or they got even wealthier. And I just thought that's not a fair system. That doesn't represent the American values that I thought this country stood for. And so that made me really question things. And I felt like the American dream was dying, especially for my generation. I felt like, why is it so much harder for people today that were in my peer group to afford, say, a home when they graduated and were working in jobs and accelerating their careers? They couldn't afford what the previous generation could in, say, the 1970s. And I just started to not have as much hope for the future, which I think was really sad. I worked in news, which isn't the happiest environment, right? We're always responding to tragedies. And I think that also contributed to it. I just saw our country really pulling apart and everyone kind of devolving into this state of frustration that they couldn't afford the things that were once easier to afford, even though they were working just as hard, if not harder, some people taking on multiple jobs, but unable to afford healthcare, education, the cost of living. And it wasn't until Bitcoin that I really found hope again. I was starting to look at the future as one where I didn't know if I would ever afford to have a family, if I would have the house and be able to afford a house like I always dreamed, which I think is core also, you know, home ownership to the American dream. I just started to question where things were going. And I also turned my frustration sometimes to politics. I thought the answer was, oh, well, you have to tax the rich. Why are they so rich? I just didn't understand. I had to humble myself and realize I didn't understand money. I didn't understand money printing. I didn't understand how the banking sector worked and why things were actually getting more expensive and why the rich were getting richer. And thank goodness for Bitcoin, because that was just this light that was shined on all of it that was kind of hidden in plain sight, right? All of us identify the problem. We just sometimes have a hard time seeing the solution. And I'm so grateful that I found Bitcoin, Bitcoin found me, and I had the seeds planted, I think, from my background in childhood, because I think that it is what will revive the American dream. But the American dream is so universal. It'll be the global dream. It'll be all of us. We can achieve what we want if we work hard and have a money that works for us, not against us.
Maybe the Bitcoin dream would be the new American dream.
Yeah, I love that.
Do you recall any major culture shock for you and your family when you first arrived and throughout the year, even if you moved to a Polish community? I'm sure the culture, the language, and how people approach things in general would be drastically different?
Yes. So this is actually a really interesting story. My mom was really set on finding really good public schools for my brother and me. So she actually moved us. We didn't grow up in Chicago, which has this very strong Polish area in it. She actually moved us out to the suburbs, which was very American. I didn't know almost any other Polish kid there. And she was one of those immigrants who I feel like there's a mix when people first immigrate here. Some people want their children to be very American, and some of them want them to be a little bit of a mix and really strongly also rooted in their previous culture or nationality. So for me, my mom really was so proud that I was going to be American. So I didn't go to Polish school like so many of the Polish kids that immigrate to America. I kind of regret it now because my Polish would be a little bit better. But my mom was just, she wanted me to be American. So I went into a school where I was totally the alien. I was the foreign person that was eating weird things, and I didn't dress the same as everybody. And it was a really big culture shock. And again, this is something I'm grateful for now, but I felt like the odd man out growing up because my friends would eat certain things or things were acceptable in their homes. That just was a no-go, no-fly zone in my home. And it's everything from, I mean, little things that like my mom would not allow us to eat things that all my friends had in their snack boxes. She didn't want us to eat processed foods or anything that said fat-free. She believed in butter and in like natural ingredients and, you know, don't just take medicine because it's the easy way to fix something. Actually, let's find out what's wrong with you. She was really holistic and she read a lot. And I didn't appreciate it at the time. I didn't appreciate it until later I learned because like so many people, I grew up thinking, well, if it's in the stores, it's clearly okay, right? Like someone checked it, it's healthy, it's good for us. Otherwise, why would they sell it? That would be so unethical. I didn't understand, again, how the system worked. And my mom was rooted in skepticism. I think that's what communism does to you. You're just skeptical of everything. Oh, the government or the media says this is good. Well, I'm going to check for myself. I'm going to not trust. I'm going to verify. My mom was like core to that. So I'm just so grateful that I had her leadership, but I always felt again, like I was the weird one. I couldn't go to sleepovers. My mom was super strict with me. Other kids could get away with, you know, having a drink or staying out late or going to a sleepover. I was not allowed to do any of that. So I was kind of angry that my mom was so strict. And then again, on the flip side, I'm so grateful because she made me really focus on my education. She made me, she really cared a lot. She really just wanted me to grow up and be rooted in a sense of morals and ethics and hard work. And I hope I made her proud. I don't know.
I'm sure you have. And sounds like she's an amazing woman because it seems like she's had a lot of courage and strength, but at the same time, she's very caring, strategically too, and care about the right things. And there's so much Bitcoin value seems already rooted in her core values and beliefs as well.
Yeah, she knows tough love. I feel like I've talked to a lot of children of immigrant parents too, and they know that too. It was really hard to make my mom say, oh, okay, this is good work. It wasn't, you know, an A minus was not going to cut it. I had to get an A. I had to really excel. She really pushed me, and she was not afraid to say when something might be critical. And I'm grateful for that too. I feel like today a lot of young people are coddled and it's like the kids are right, the parents aren't right. Or the state is right, the parents aren't right. And I just think that's a little bit backwards. And I think that a strong parental figure is actually really important so that you do learn sort of right from wrong and you're challenged at an early age and you know to question your own beliefs or what you're hearing from peers or from your school. And so, yeah, I'm very grateful to her. I'm very, very grateful.
And the role model aspect really shines through too, because she's so hardworking, has so much strength and courage, and you see it on a daily basis, making all these decisions for the family. But I'm sure as a kid, you know, when you don't get the full picture and you don't get all the sleepovers and the perks, were you, like, did you understand her intention? Because what we see sometimes with kids is that their parents don't let them to eat sugar, let's say, or chocolate. And then they grow up eating lots of chocolates because they're overcompensating, or they don't get the freedom to do whatever things. And then when they grow up, they're kind of swing over correcting their path. Have you had a phase where you had that tendency?
No. And I don't know how to explain it. I never had really a rebellious phase. And I think it's because I genuinely feared losing the respect of my mom and my dad. I there was this fear. They were not my friends. They were my parents. And it wasn't this, like, but I got so much love, right? Like, my mom always instilled that literally I can do whatever I want. If I have a dream, there is no reason why I can't make it happen, especially because we came here, and even if it's a one in a million shot, you go for it. So it was like that strength that helped me build confidence, but also I had to build the confidence also through struggle, because things did not just come easily. We grew up in an area where most people had far more money, like upper middle class, if not even higher. And so I saw my friends have these beautiful homes, and it made me sad that, like, we didn't have that. Some people have heard on the other shows, the first place we moved to, it was this tiny apartment. It actually, Vivian, it just went on sale. I was looking at Zillow. The first apartment we moved to in America just went on sale. It's like $90,000. And it was two bedrooms. And because of my brother and my age difference, I had one room, my brother had the other, and my parents slept on the sofa. They were just so, you know, self-sacrificing, and it was all about, this is about building a good life for our children. And it's just so crazy to think. I mean, that time feels like it's yesterday for me. But no, I think a lot of people who grew up sort of with a poverty or a background of struggle, they want to justify the sacrifice that their family members or mentors or whoever helped them along the way made. And so that kept me from going down the path of things that maybe other people at some point did, like the rebellious phase, right? Like I was never tempted by things that maybe some people in my peer group were, because I was just afraid that my mom would disown me.
Wow. That's really powerful. And I can imagine coming from a very modest background and seeing your parents, your family work to the extent that they did you catch yourself feeling a sense of guilt at any given time?
I think that's the emotion I might struggle with the most, actually. I don't know if you feel this way, but I put a lot of weight on my shoulders because I saw my parents work so hard. So my goal from a very young age was, I'm going to take care of them. Like, no matter what, I have to achieve to the highest possible level. I have to make enough money so that I can take care of not just myself, and I don't have to worry about the financial struggles that we experienced, but also I can, like, retire my parents because they deserve to have a break, you know? And I would see other friends' parents who maybe the mom got to stay at home or they're retired early. And I just saw my parents working so hard. And I was like, you know, no one's better or worse as a person, right? As human beings, both are great people, or both are great sets of parents. And it's like, why does one have it so much harder than the other? And I really do think that this is something that I hope Bitcoin helps with, because, you know, life is kind of a competition, and it feels so much like the system is rigged against the average working person today. And it really is. If you're a wage earner, if you save in cash, you can't generate the type of wealth that will keep up with the pace of asset inflation and the cost of living. And something needs to break that cycle so that we can help the average person start to save. And I really do believe in what Jeff Booth spreads and his message, which is that because we have an abundance in money, we have scarcity everywhere else, and we have this growing wealth divide. But if we had scarcity in money, we would have abundance everywhere else. There wouldn't be this feeling of people constantly left behind and wondering if the future was going to be better than the present or past. We actually would build a more beautiful future that's more cooperative. And I really hope that Bitcoin helps me achieve that. And I'm not there yet. You know, a lot of people sometimes see that I'm a public voice in the space, or I have a show. That does not mean I've retired my parents yet. I hope it's coming. Come on, Bitcoin.
yeah, for sure. Like I can totally relate to that. And at the end of the day, like our parents love us because, and then they want the best for us. They want us to be able to live a prosperous life in this world and become our own person, become sovereign, become independent in this world and doing our own things and fulfilling our missions. And the best way we can make them proud and make ourselves proud is to actually go after these missions and be audacious, just like you said, to really go for that shot, no matter how slim the chance are.
Yes. And I think it kind of goes back to the idea that struggle builds confidence. And whether it comes from your parents or from within or from a mentor or a friend or from reading books, I mean, wherever it comes from, I think everyone needs to find within them the courage to take chances. You have to learn what you need to learn, right? I think that in anything, you need to develop a set of skills. You need to be humble, which you have to be with Bitcoin, right? But then take chances, knock on doors, ask for help, ask for mentors. And that's one thing I'm grateful for that I think really helped me in my journalism career that ultimately prepared me also for Bitcoin, is I felt like I had nothing to lose and so much to fight for, to try to achieve and gain, that I wasn't afraid to, you know, knock on the door, ask for the job, apply for the job, ask for help, try to get the mentor. I was just willing to go to that next step, whereas so many people are their own worst enemies and they're afraid and they stand back and they question themselves. And I think most people will look back on their lives and no matter what industry they're in or what they did, they're going to wish they took more chances and were less afraid. I think that most of us would look back and be like, why was I so stressed?
Yeah.
Why didn't I do more? Why didn't I try? Why didn't I ask? You'll never regret something that you try and fail at because it's a lesson and it shouldn't be a regret. But I think you do regret the shots that you don't take and the missed opportunities and wondering like, well, what if I did? So I hope that that gives people courage, because again, sometimes you don't have parents that are encouraging. Sometimes you have parents that maybe hinder your ability to have confidence, or friends or whatever it may be. But find something that gives you hope and that sort of inner power to take the next step in whatever you want to do. Because all of us, I think, are capable of so much greatness that we don't give ourselves credit for or try. I think we're all in our heads worrying what everyone else is thinking about us. And everyone's doing the same thing about themselves, right?
Yeah, totally.
So it's like it's worth it to just take the chance, bet on yourself. But again, like humble yourself and study and learn so that when you have an opportunity, you're prepared to really seize it.
One thing that really helped me is the so what mentality. So oftentimes we are afraid of being rejected, but mm-hmm. We're rejected, like, so what? Like, you know?
Right.
So what? Yeah. And we are rejected, but we've tried. You have to succeed on your first try. And I think that's a myth that people commonly go through. And all of these perfectionists out there, I guess in a way, like, we are part of that group. We're the type of people that, like, A- is not good enough, you know? Like, yeah. we're kind of in that crowd, too. So I was troubled by this mentality of, oh, if I try something, I have to succeed. I have to only try something or go do it when I'm confident that I can do a good job. And that's such a limiting mentality, in the sense that you're putting so much extra stress, pressure on yourself when you don't really have to. And oftentimes it's about perspectives. You're a good student, you were a good student, achieved like good grades and had a successful career in the fiat system. And now with the Bitcoin standard, it's very much about proof of work. How has your mindset shifted from excelling within the traditional system to embracing the value and principles of the Bitcoin community from a career standpoint? Because I guess the fiat system and Bitcoin system, we care about different things, and credibility means different things in these two places.
I'm really grateful for the Bitcoin community for being so much about proof of work. Everyone has something to contribute, but you have to sort of prove yourself. And I think that's good, right? Things that come easy, I think, are not as valuable and worth it in life than the things that really challenge you. And something that you said earlier, Vivian, made me think, I don't know if you're like this, but I love when I hear stories of people, especially extremely successful people, overcome obstacles. I love reading the biographies and autobiographies of people who came from like the rags to riches stories where they overcame so much and everything was against them, or they lost the big job, or they didn't make it until they were in their 40s or 50s, because it really is inspiring. A story of someone just, you know, waking up on third base and achieving or inheriting a bunch of money, those stories are fine. And there are some great people who have been in those positions, but they don't excite me and make me as motivated as a story of, oh my gosh, that person had everything against them and they didn't let it hold them back. Like movies like Pursuit of Happiness. I just think we don't give ourselves credit for all the things we can achieve. And so I try to keep that mentality, especially within the Bitcoin space, because I did have a lot of imposter syndrome. I came from a background of journalism, which did help me in terms of just communication and storytelling, but I knew nothing about the financial system. I had to sit down and acknowledge first to myself that I thought I knew how the world worked, and yet I knew almost nothing. I did not understand how money worked, how it was issued, what fractional reserve banking was, what money printing was, what inflation really was. And so because I knew the symptoms of the problem, and those were easy to identify, and I worked a lot reporting on them, I couldn't identify the cause. And therefore, I could not appreciate or see or want to take time to explore the solution, which I think is Bitcoin. And so I'm really grateful that I've had the chance to do that. Fiat, I think, also programs you into this mentality of you're a soldier, you work for the corporation, you go to the 9-to-5, you get your 401k. And really, as I zoom out, I think that is a really limiting worldview and life experience, that you just work for 40, 50 years only to maybe not even be able to retire because of the cost of living increases. So I feel empowered that Bitcoin has also allowed me to kind of decentralize my life and go into the decentralized media world and allow myself to create my own destiny, be my own boss, not be in a system that is this like controlled, centralized gatekeeper of information, but allow myself to sort of flow freely through the world of information online. And it's super rewarding, but very, very challenging at the same time.
It has been a shift, because I don't know if you were the same, but growing up, I was told that your job is to like get good grades and study, be a good student, so that you get into a good university, and then from there you get into a big corporation and a good company and be a good employee and do your job and, you know, get promoted. And that was the past that when I was growing up, that I thought this was everybody's doing, and that's what I needed to do to get a little bit of the freedom that I was hoping for. And boy, was I wrong. Knowing what you know today and walked your path in both worlds, what would you suggest a young generation to plan ahead for their future? Because now we're hearing Bitcoiners debate on, should I be homeschooling my kids? Like, should I just ditch the traditional educational system and leave the fiat system altogether? Is college not worth it? Now we're in this transition between from the fiat standard to Bitcoin standard, and that's going to take a while. And how would you suggest the younger generation plan ahead for the future knowing that it's going to be a process and it's not going to happen overnight.
Well, I think the younger generation is lucky in the sense that they will have more options than all of us did. They can increase their knowledge in any part of the world just by connecting to a device that's online, which is, I think, incredible. I mean, you could get degrees from professors from all the best universities just sitting at home from wherever you are if you have the motivation and you make the time to do it, which is, I think, super, super cool. But overall, young people and everyone needs to be able to save in a form of money that can't be manipulated and basically stolen out from under them. I think that that is going to be the most empowering thing for young people to be able to have a form of savings that won't be diluted and that they can actually count on for the future so that they can make other decisions in their lives. Because right now it's just, it feels more like a rat race and everyone is working harder for less. They're taking on side hustles. And even that corporate life that was so attractive to so many people, that has lost a lot of its luster. And it doesn't allow people to get ahead and to be financially free. In fact, it does enslave you to debt in a lot of ways. We encourage debt on every level. We've normalized it. We subsidize it. Your biggest write-off is your mortgage. And so most people do not own their homes. They're in debt up to their eyeballs. Then they put other things on their credit card bills and their wages don't keep up. And so we need to force people to start asking the question, why is this happening? And why is that process actually accelerating? It's burdening future generations at a faster and faster rate and placing the pressure down on them. Because then you start to kind of understand, well, no wonder society's starting to pull apart. No wonder you have young people who no longer want to have kids and they look at the world in this very negative, nihilistic way. Because the thing that kind of grounds you is being able to plan for your future. That low time preference that so many Bitcoiners talk about. If your money holds value, you can drop your time preference and start to think about your future. And we can't do that with the money that we have right now. It is so manipulated at its core. It is further and further centralized into the hands of very few people, and it turns into a vacuum where more and more power gets funneled into that. So it's a concentration of both economic and political power that exerts more and more control over the average person, and it's suffocating the majority of people and not allowing us to achieve our potential.
What was the motivation and rationale behind picking a career in the field of media when you first started?
That's interesting. I grew up, when we moved to the United States, watching a ton of television and movies. It wasn't just news. We watched a lot of news, but we also watched a lot of movies. So actually, when I was very young, I was a little bit confused. I knew I wanted to work in media. I wanted to work in a job that was basically seen through four angles, but I didn't know if I wanted to work in news, in like the real world, or if I wanted to work in the fantasy world and be an actress, because my mom loved classic Hollywood movies, and it depicted American life as kind of beautiful. And I love fairy tales. I grew up with fairy tales. Anything can come true. So when you juxtapose that with how hard real life is, I was very attracted to the idea of working in an industry where there's kind of always a happy ending, because you can write it. You can write the ending. And it was very hopeful for me. So I went out to school in Los Angeles, and that was where the pivot happened, because not only did I see how difficult it was to become an actor and the kind of sacrifices you would have to make, and maybe if I came from a different socioeconomic background, I would have said, you know what, why not? I'm just going to live this life of being a waitress and work in small roles. But I knew it would break my parents' heart. I knew it would just cause them so much anxiety to worry. And so I took a bunch of journalism classes, and I thought, this is actually great because I get the adrenaline. I get the excitement from performance, because I do get to go, you kind of put on, your reporter, your journalist, or your on-air personality cap, and you get to be a little bit of a different version of yourself. But you're actually, I thought it was very noble. You're actually kind of helping the world, because you're clarifying what's happening with the events around people. You're interviewing important people. You're learning. You're constantly learning about what's happening with the world and then sharing that information through stories. And so I just thought it was a really noble profession that got to combine my two loves. And so, yeah, that was that. I wanted to be on air as a journalist. It's crazy to think about the jobs that now exist through this type of technology where people can literally put up a camera in their home and start to talk about the things that they care about or start interviewing people. It's really democratized access to so many different things, as well as the information that people get to receive. It's crazy to think about, because all of it was sort of bubbling up, starting to emerge when I was in school. And I interviewed this woman, Michelle Phan, on my show, who I really admire because she was one of the first people on YouTube. She was like, I'm going to make content. And she has built an incredible business. And by the way, she's a Bitcoiner if anyone wants to check out that talk, but it was really inspiring. She was also first generation immigrant, and she didn't abide by that rule of, oh, you have to work in the 9-to-5 job. She saw this new technology and she full on just embraced it, started to experiment, not knowing what would happen, having zero audience. And she built a massive business. And it's really cool to see that people have been able to do that. I wish I would have experimented a little bit more on my own, but I was very much in that framework of I have to play by this rule and this template for where my career goes and how it progresses. And I didn't see the shift that was happening right from under me. I mean, the amount of change that happened so quickly with media, with journalism, as people got online and started to share their stories and become citizen journalists through things like Twitter and YouTube, it drastically, radically changed my industry. And sometimes you have to embrace change. Like sometimes we're like, oh no, it's happening. Why? We have to still stay in our horse and buggy. No. Embrace the change and see how it can help you. And I think that's what's going to happen with Bitcoin too. A lot of people are turning their back to it, and they don't realize how much it can literally help them with their business, their personal life, and everything in between.
It's called comfort zone for a reason. And what I've realized about comfort zone is that if you don't actively expand your comfort zone, your comfort zone actually shrinks. And if you don't go out there, and then you're like, because there's essentially nothing wrong if you want to stay in your comfort zone, but if it shrinks, then you're kind of forced to go out, because what happened is that if you just keep not going out, in the end, you will have so little space that even if you stand still with one foot on the floor, it's going to be not enough space. And even if you're standing still, and as we all know, if you're standing on one foot, it's not very comfortable either.
I completely agree with you. Sometimes you have to lean in, and I don't know why we have in our core just this reluctancy to maybe question our beliefs that are so core and be confronted with something that's opposed to them. I see that happen a lot with politics now. It's like some people can't even have a conversation with someone who disagrees with them. They can't even take the time to just do a little bit of homework and try to see the other side or the other perspective. And when it comes to Bitcoin, people are so against it who haven't taken even 10 hours to study it or learn about it. And you kind of wonder, like, why is your opposition so strong when you haven't taken the time to see, do you believe what you're actually saying? And I hope that changes. I don't know what it will take, because some people, it is very hard. You can like lead them to water and they'll never drink, or they'll get angry about you for leading them to the water. But I guess that's where that saying comes in with Bitcoin. You get it at the price you deserve, right? You're always against Bitcoin before you're for Bitcoin.
I think a lot of it comes to ego. I was reading this book called The Mountain Is You, and it's a book that teaches you how to get rid of that self-sabotaging tendency. And it's saying that how as humans, we're not naturally drawn to happiness, but we're naturally drawn to comfort. And if you are in, this is why a lot of people actually stay in toxic relationships. It's not because they're happy. It's because it's familiar. And familiarity is comforting for them. Wow. And to be scared is comforting for them because it's familiar. Mm-hmm. It's easier for them to be sad and depressed than actually change their behavior and go do something, because that depressed state is familiar and comforting for them, even though they are not happy. So I think by recognizing that, it's a huge step of moving forward in your life and taking initiatives. And you, in your past stories, and now you have longer format with your show, and that's great. But before, you had very little space to cover complex stories. So I want to pick your brain on, I guess, asking the right questions, because oftentimes, the quality of answers we get is closely correlated to the quality of questions. When you have such limited time to uncover a complex story, how do you determine what questions to ask?
That's a great question. And I agree with you that you get a different answer depending on how you frame the question. For me, it's always been to be as prepared as possible. Watch what they've said before or read it, because I think that if I have a better understanding of how they see the world, how they view something, what their experience is, I can shape the question to be a little bit more specific or elicit a more specific, clear answer. Sometimes also, I've done more homework than maybe another host, and I'll watch an interview and the person is literally answering the same question over and over and over. And then so for someone that maybe is a big fan of that guest, that's not a great experience as a listener, because you're like, well, I've heard this before. I've just heard them say it now three times. So what's something that you can do to make sure that the question at least brings out a little bit of a different answer? Maybe you start with the question, or you acknowledge something that they answered with that question, but then you frame it in a different way, or you add some context, or you have them share it a little bit more. I just think it makes it more interesting and more dynamic of a conversation. And I think also the guest then realizes you have done your homework and you care, and people treat you differently. Like, even whether we're recording or not, if you're having a conversation with someone and you can tell that they're very engaged and they cared enough to, you know, maybe read your work or watch the other things you've done, you're probably going to be a little bit more open with them because you feel more comfortable, as opposed to if they're just asking the same thing and you've answered the question five times, you're just going to want to kind of get through it. So I just urge people to prepare. If you're in a position where you're asking questions, my hope is that you're really genuinely interested in that question and in the answer. So be as specific and clear as possible, having done as much homework as you can.
How about for your personal life? Like, when you're thinking about what am I going to do next for my next steps in my life as a person, as a woman, as an individual in society, like, what are some of the questions you ask yourself, and how do you ensure you actually ask the right question?
That's a great question. So I feel like I'm in a transitional phase. For a long time, I felt like I was prioritizing my career so much and feeling that frustration we talked about earlier, where I'm accelerating my career, I'm getting to the next step, but I'm not making enough to actually have the things that I want, to take care of my parents or to buy the house. And I was seeing the future as one where I'm just never going to catch up, which is frustrating, right? It's exhausting to think, like, no matter how hard I work, I'm just never going to make it, which I think so many people are feeling. So Bitcoin has changed that for me. I feel like I'm in a career that doesn't feel like a job. I feel super passionate. I feel like even though we've done a great job helping people learn about Bitcoin, there are millions and millions and millions of more people that we need to help orange pill and bring into this fold and understanding the financial system. So I feel really motivated. But I would also like to be able to now focus a little bit more on my personal life, which is I want to build a family. That's something that's been important to me. As you heard at the top of the interview, I'm very close with my parents, especially my mom, and I want to have that role for a child. Like, I want to be a mom now. I would really like to now that I'm equipped with some of this. I feel like when you come to another country and you work really, really hard and you feel like you've finally gotten to a point where you sort of understand how the system and how the world works, I want to give my children that advantage, because it is an advantage. I coming to this country, my parents didn't know how stocks worked and I don't, you know, begrudge them for that. They had to learn also, but I didn't have anyone when I was young to be kind of forging a sense of understanding of, like, how to work this system, right? How to accumulate wealth, the fact that you need to accumulate assets, the fact that money's being printed out from under you. So I hope that by having that information and those skills now, I can maybe give a head start to my kids that I didn't have. You know, hopefully they'll be at least a decade or two ahead of where I was. And because they'll have sound money, they'll be better in a financial sense too. But I just want to, I think that life is about giving back. I think the more you give, the happier you are, because you feel like you've made a difference and like you've been impactful. I think some of the most lonely people are just in their heads, not being of service. And I want to do that, not just for the community, the Bitcoin space through my work, but I want to do that in my personal life through family. I want to give to my family. And hopefully that's the next step.
What was the most memorable story that you covered in your previous media career, and how did it impact you either personally or professionally?
So I love this question. When I entered into the journalism world, it was right after the great financial crisis. So my parents had just lost everything. And that not only planted a seed that would eventually sprout to appreciating Bitcoin, but it also sparked a little flame. I was upset. I was angry on behalf of my family that two people who worked so hard could be screwed over by the system the way that they were. And that's how I felt. I felt like they had worked so hard, played by all the rules, paid their taxes, they're good people, waking up early, coming home late at night, working weekends, and they lose their home, but all these bankers get bailed out. So I was angry. And again, I channeled my anger in the wrong places. I thought, tax the rich, you know, they're the 1%, they're ruining our lives. So I really relate to the people out there who think that way. Unfortunately, I was wrong. I was wrong because I didn't understand the system. I had to learn. But the most memorable story that helped me eventually, again, especially when I learned about Bitcoin, was early in my career, I developed some sources that helped lead me to uncover public records that showed that a local mayor of our town had a consulting relationship with a local developer. He was essentially accepting bribes from a developer in order to approve his projects in the community. And that was frustrating because there was an abuse of power. There were other people who were hardworking, placing their proposals before the city, and they were not getting voted on because of this special interest relationship that was concealed and it was hidden, that journalists had to expose. And so I was so dogged in chasing after. Seeing my parents, what they went through, I felt like there's this injustice at the core of the system, and these people should be held to account. And we need to hold their feet to the fire because they're in positions of power and they never lose their jobs. And they just get richer and richer with all these like side deals that they're doing. And I was fed up. So there are videos of me from my first job, I mean, chasing the mayor and getting the door shut in my face. And it was a really memorable experience because I learned the power also of following the money trail. There are public records. There are things you can dig for if you're persistent and you know where to look. And sometimes people will be held accountable. So the end of that story resulted in FBI raid of City Hall, 33 counts of public corruption charged. And then that story repeated itself, no joke, with a different city council member 4 years later in a completely different city in Los Angeles. And I was doing the same type of work. And it just shows again that this is why people say there's a swamp. There's a swamp and we need to drain it. And we need new, fresh ideas and people in there who are not beholden to this centralized monopoly on money and power. We need to decentralize it. We need to bring fresh ideas in there. We need a new form of money we can rely on. And we need people held accountable. Government is not accountable for the things they do that ultimately impoverish all of us. So it's funny to think back on that story because that was more than 10 years ago. It got me my first Emmy nomination. But I think in a way, like, relates to Bitcoin.
The story just showed that you entered journalism with the right type of intention. You were really not afraid of the status quo and the authority with their power because of that drive, that fierce. We're finding ourselves in this transition, but at the same time, we still need to work with the fiat system. And there's so many Bitcoiners that are looking to leave their fiat job, and they see how pointless it could be with the how their job's set up, and maybe they feel like they're part of that rent-seeking machine, and they feel the pain of actually having to work in that situation. And I've had calls with Bitcoiners where they're telling me that I really feel depressed at my job. Like, I'm a Bitcoiner, I want to have a Bitcoin job, but that's not always possible. And I work in this job where I don't like it, and I self-identify with it. And even worse, they feel like they're contributing to something that's they are fundamentally against, and can feel a little bit hypocritical even. So how do we approach this dilemma to deal with our emotions and even guilt and try to make something positive and productive out of it?
It's a great question, and I don't have all the answers, but I think everyone needs to start small. Do what you can. We can all do something. And whether that's in your personal life, trying to orange pill the people that you most care about, getting them to understand Bitcoin, interacting with them with Bitcoin, to at your job, trying to incorporate Bitcoin in what you do, which, by the way, I did do to a small extent. I did my best to pitch stories about Bitcoin. I was able to do a few, but there was, you know, ultimately some pushback because that was not my beat. And that was not what the priority of the networks were to cover. So then I found this outlet on the side, right? I had my job and that was my source of income, but my passion was to continue to learn about Bitcoin. So I did everything I could in my hours outside of work, early in the morning, late at night, in between, to just try to continue to learn and then start to put content out. And I had no expectation of where it would go and what it would turn into. But sometimes you have to follow your gut and take some chances. And there are people to be helped, and you can be of service as a Bitcoiner in literally every industry. We've come far, but we also haven't, right? I mean, there are literally billions of people that we can reach who come from all different backgrounds, speak different languages, work in different industries. And there are a range of different hurdles that each person has to understanding or even having the time to learn about Bitcoin. So there's always someone you can help or do something within your industry that starts to move us in that direction. You just have to get a little bit creative about it. But that's what I think is so great too, is Bitcoin as a form of hard and sound money that no one can manipulate. It returns us to a system where we reevaluate value. You need to provide value for you to acquire Bitcoin or earn it, right? You have to expend resources if you want to mine it. You have to provide a valuable service or good if you want to have people pay for you and pay for it in Bitcoin. And so there's some, like, people have to start thinking, like, what value and service can I provide that is really lacking? Because there's always someone who's willing to pay for that or take the time to watch it. And so I think that it's just a personal journey people will have to go on. But there are certainly so many areas where we really need more Bitcoiners to contribute.
Yeah, totally. And shifting gears, you've found love in Bitcoin. And congratulations. I've heard your story. And you and Sam, you met, you kind of grew up in the same area and didn't meet until years and decades after because of Bitcoin. And that's a great rom-com by itself, and you're living it. Moving towards a new stage, new life stage with more adventures and opportunities for growth in the unit of a family. So that's very exciting. And you're both Bitcoiners in working in the space. And I bet it's such a high stress and high commitment industry in Bitcoin and in media. So what are some of the tips and tricks or specific routines you could share that helped maintaining a healthy and supportive relationship?
Well, I think the most important thing is sharing common values, which you get when you find a Bitcoiner. That's one of the things I loved about this space in general. I felt like I just clicked with people on a deeper level right off the bat, because if you've found your way to Bitcoin, then there are certain principles goals and values that you hold dear. And those are very positive ones in my eyes. And so it was nice to meet someone, because it's funny, I would have never wanted to date someone in the news business. Like, nope, not at all. Thank you, but no thank you. But with Bitcoin, it's fun because we're both on the same mission. I think the challenge is just this industry and this world of Bitcoin is 24/7. It doesn't shut off. There are a lot of demands. When you're living online, it can sometimes be overwhelming and overstimulatory because you're constantly checking Twitter or this or the price. And you need to find ways to just kind of shut it off. And certainly everyone, I think, that's watching this as well as me can improve on that. But it's also fun because it's like, it feels like we've just caught this wave and it hasn't even taken the full form and force that we know it will. And we're just eager to see where it goes. And we know that this is a huge opportunity. Both Sam and me felt we're millennials, and we just felt like we were so behind in terms of, okay, well, we've excelled and we've gotten somewhere in our careers, so to speak, but yet we don't have the house and we don't have our retirement figured out. And like, how are we going to get there? And Bitcoin has given us hope that we will. And we really put our money where our mouth is. That is how we're saving. So it's, you know, sometimes a little scary to think neither of us are a hedge for the other. It's not like I found someone in real estate who has a bunch of, you know, properties that we could fall back on. Nope. We're both in digital property. So, we believe in it though. And we're supportive of each other's work. And I actually hope that Sam's work gets to shine a little bit more, because not a lot of people are familiar with his writings. And he's really just so brilliant. He knows this space far better than he knows Bitcoin far better than I do. And I hope that he gets sort of the recognition that he deserves.
You both are doing great, great work. And I have to say that it's been really, really nice to meet you both and tap into your knowledge on Bitcoin and all sorts of perspective in life. And it's been really nice to see how happy you both are. Just the brief moments that we cross paths in different parts of the world. So very, very excited for you both. And how has your relationship contributed to your personal growth? Did you find something that your relationship actually contribute to on top of what you already know about yourself and Bitcoin?
I think with every relationship, you learn a lot about yourself. Sam is someone who brings me a lot of peace. I think that because of my background and my experience and the struggles I've encountered and what my family went through, I tend to be someone who's like a little bit anxious and nervous and just kind of like ready for the worst thing to happen. I always have my guard kind of up. And Sam sort of helps me relax and realize that, you know, zoom out, the world is not going to fall apart. If one day something goes wrong, it's all going to be okay. This is about this long-term mission. And that's what family and that's what relationships are, right? It's about like the long term and the journey that you're on. So he's actually been really wonderful to have around, because again, I tend to be more of the impatient kind of like nervous Nelly. And he tends to be the more calm, take it as it comes, which I appreciate. And it's funny to think, because our backgrounds are so, so different. We grew up in very different families, very different socioeconomic backgrounds. But I think we bring out the best in each other too, because I like push him too, because I'm a very, like, I'm a go-getter and I'm like, you know, I want to be doing this and this and this and seeing the world. And like, I think I bring him out of his shell a little bit with that.
What advice would you give to others, either in the Bitcoin community or not, who are looking for meaningful relationships?
I would say really get true with yourself and your values and what you're looking for. I think when I was younger, I would seek a lot of validation externally. And sometimes that causes you to almost go for the things that are not accepting of you, if that makes sense. I would sort of be attracted to the people that didn't like me back, and I would wonder what would win them over. And I realized that that wasn't even the person I wanted, right? It was almost just like I was seeking the approval. And it's nice where it's just nice to be in a relationship where you value yourself, you present yourself the way you truly are, what you want, how you want to be seen and heard, and what you actually like and don't like. And the person accepts you for exactly that and loves you and cherishes you and supports you. I think that you really have to get true with yourself, though. And I had to go through a process of that. And don't lose hope, because I, for a long time too, I was like, it's never going to happen for me. It's just like, you know, and I was really sad about that because I really want to have kids. And, obviously there's a clock ticking, and, I really hope God graces us with that, but don't give up, because, sometimes the timing works out really perfectly when you least expect it. And like, you can start over. I mean, some people stay in relationships where they're really unhappy because they're so afraid of starting over. I've seen that with people too, where they're in something that really doesn't fulfill what they need in their core, but they feel like they're maybe too old or it's been too long, and it's really never, it's never too late. And sometimes that relationship is a failure that you learn from. And, I mean, I just think that people should not, hold themselves back from finding true happiness and fulfillment in relationships as well as career.
Perfect place to insert that line is that the best time to plant a tree was 10 years ago, and the second best time is now. So it's never too late to go after what you truly desire in life, finding your life's mission and start working on it, taking small initiatives and plant seeds. Some, not everything's going to sprout, but we just need to plant enough seeds until some sprouts, and then we can focus on the ones that do sprout and tend those into flowers, to trees, to orchard, to vineyard, whatever you're into, what kind of plants you're into. Yeah. In life, and nurture them into something that we are really proud of, for spending our time and energy, our own roles to nurture in the planet B612, I guess, using a Little Prince reference. And thank you, Natalie, for taking the time to chat with us and graciously sharing your stories and learnings throughout the way. What's the best way to stay close to your work?
I love that you quoted the Little Prince. I don't know if you know this or see, but I collect the Little Prince in different languages. Nice. It's the one thing that I collect. So I have a bunch of different languages of it in there. You can follow me on Twitter at Nat Brunel. Coin Stories is my podcast. I also have a free newsletter I put out once a week. Your wrap up of economic and Bitcoin news in less than 10 minutes. And I hope people do connect. I love meeting new Bitcoiners and finding out how I can do my job better, or who I should interview. So reach out.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time, Natalie. Any final thoughts for the Live with Bitcoin audience?
It's never too late to buy Bitcoin. The best time to buy Bitcoin was yesterday, but the second best day is today.
I'm going to take on that initiative and buy some Bitcoin after this. It's been a great year knowing you, and your kindness and generosity has really inspired me in this field and a lot of other women and men in the space taking initiatives, finding Bitcoin through your amazing content and the interviews that you put out. So thank you so much for your great work, and please keep up the great work for our community. So we both, we all benefit from the content and the insights that you help bring out of your guests and our industry, and really excited for what's ahead of you, and can't wait to see you again very soon.
Thank you. I feel the same way about you. Thank you so much for all the work you're doing, Vivian. And thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode. I'm your host, Vivian. This is Live with Bitcoin. We'll see you in the next episode.